Chapter 22. Jammers. Jammers was up 12 more flights of dead escalator and occupied the rear third of the top floor. Aside from Leon's place, Bobby had never seen a nightclub, and he found Jammers both impressive and scary. Impressive because of its scale and what he took to be the exceptional quality of the fittings, and scary because a nightclub by day is somehow innately unreal. Witchy. He peered around, thumbs snagged in the back pockets of his new jeans, while Jackie conducted a whispered conversation with a long-faced white man in rumpled blue coveralls. The place was fitted out with dark ultra-suede banquettes, round black tables, and dozens of ornate screens of pierced wood. The ceiling was painted black, each table faintly illuminated by its own little recessed flood aimed straight down out of the dark. There was a central stage, brightly lit now with work lights strung on yellow flecks, and in the middle of the stage, a set of cherry red acoustic drums. He wasn't sure why, but it gave him the creeps, some sidelong sense of a half-life, as though something was about to shift just at the edge of his vision. "Bobby," Jackie said, "come over here and meet Jammer." He crossed the stretch of plain dark carpet with all the cool he could muster and faced the long-faced man, who had dark thinning hair and wore a white evening shirt under his coveralls. The man's eyes were narrow, the hollows of his cheeks shadowed with a day's growth of beard.
"Well," the man said, "you want to be a cowboy?"
He was looking at Bobby's t-shirt, and Bobby had the uncomfortable feeling that he might be about to laugh.
"Jammer was a jockey," Jackie said. "Hot as they come, weren't you, Jammer?"
"So they say,"
Jammer said, still looking at Bobby.
"Long time ago, Jackie.
How many hours you logged running?"
he asked Bobby. Bobby's face went hot.
"Well, one, I guess."
Jammer raised his bushy eyebrows.
"Gotta start somewhere."
He smiled, his teeth small and unnaturally even, and Bobby thought, too numerous.
"Bobby," Jackie said, "why don't you ask Jammer about this wig character the Finn was telling you about?"
Jammer glanced at her, then back to Bobby.
"You know the Finn? For a hot dogger, you're in pretty deep, aren't you?"
He took a blue plastic inhaler from his hip pocket and inserted it in his left nostril, snorted, then put it back in his pocket.
"Ludgate. The wig. Finn's talking about the wig. Must be in his dotage."
Bobby didn't know what that meant, but it didn't seem like the time to ask.
"Well," Bobby ventured, "this wig's up in orbit somewhere, and he sells the Finn stuff sometimes."
"No shit. Well, you could have fooled me. I would have told you the wig was either dead or drooling. Crazier than your usual cowboy, you know what I mean? Batshit. Gone. Haven't heard of him in years."
"Jammer," Jackie said, "I think it's maybe best if Bobby just tells you the story. Beauvoir's due here this afternoon, and he'll have some questions for you, so you better know where things stand."
Jammer looked at her.
"Well, I see. Mr. Beauvoir's calling in that favor, is he?"
"Can't speak for him," she said, "but that would be my guess. We need a safe place to store the count here."
"What count?"
"Me," Bobby said. "That's me."
"Great,"
Jammer said, with a total lack of enthusiasm.
"So come on back into the office."
Bobby couldn't keep his eyes off the cyberspace deck
that took up a third of the surface of Jammer's antique oak desk. It was matte black, a custom job, no trademarks anywhere. He kept craning forward while he told Jammer about Two-A-Day and his attempted run, about the girl feeling thing and his mother getting blown up. It was the hottest looking deck he'd ever seen, and he remembered Jackie saying that Jammer had been such a shit-hot cowboy in his day. Jammer slumped back in his chair when Bobby was finished.
"You want to try it?" he asked. He sounded tired.
"Try it?"
"The deck.
I think you might want to try it.
It's something about the way you keep rubbing your ass on the chair. Either you want to try it or you got to piss bad."
"Shit, yeah. I mean, yeah, thanks, yeah, I would."
"Why not? No way for anybody to know it's you and not me, right? Why don't you jack in with him, Jackie? Kind of keep track."
He opened a desk drawer and took out two trode sets.
"But don't do anything, right? I mean, just buzz on out and spin. Don't try to run any numbers. I owe Beauvoir and Lucas a favor, and it looks like how I'm paying it back is by helping keep you intact."
He handed one set of trodes to Jackie, the other to Bobby. He stood up, grabbed handles on either side of the black console, and spun it around so it faced Bobby.
"Go on. You'll cream your jeans. Thing's 10 years old, and it'll still wipe ass on most anything. Guy name of Automatic Jack built it straight up from scratch. He was Bobby Quine's hardware artist once. The two of them burnt the blue lights together, but that was probably before you were born."
Bobby already had his trodes on. Now he looked at Jackie.
"You ever jacked tandem before?"
He shook his head.
"Okay, we'll jack, but I'll hang off your left shoulder. I say jack out, jack out. You see anything funny, it'll be because I'm with you, understand?"
He nodded. She undid a pair of long, silver-headed pins at the rear of her fedora and took it off, putting it down on the desk beside Jammer's deck. She slid the trodes on over the orange silk headscarf and smoothed the contacts against her forehead.
"Let's go," she said. Now and ever was fast forward. Jammer's deck jacked up so high above the neon hot cores, a topography of data he didn't know. Big stuff, mountain high, sharp and corporate in the non-place that was cyberspace. "Slow it down, Bobby."
Jackie's voice, low and sweet beside him in the void.
"Jesus Christ, this thing's slick!"
"Yeah, but damp it down. The rush isn't any good for us. You want to cruise, keep us up here and slow it down."
He eased off on forward until they seemed to coast along. He turned to the left, expecting to see her there, but there was nothing.
"I'm here," she said. "Don't worry."
"Who is Quine?"
"Quine? Some cowboy Jammer knew. He knew them all in his day."
He took a right angle left at random, pivoting smoothly at the grid intersection, testing the deck for response. It was amazing, totally unlike anything he'd felt before in cyberspace.
"Holy shit! This thing makes an Ono Sendai look like a kid's toy."
"It's probably got OS circuitry in it. That's what they used to use, Jammer says. Takes us up a little more."
They rose effortlessly through the grid, the data receding below them.
"There isn't a hell of a lot to see up here,"
he complained.
"Wrong. You see some interesting stuff, you hang out long enough in the blank parts."
The fabric of the matrix seemed to shiver, directly in front of them.
Jackie, stop here. Hold it. It's okay. Trust me.
Somewhere, far away, his hands moving over the unfamiliar keyboard configuration. He held them steady now, while a section of cyberspace blurred, grew milky.
What is Danbala ab Montele?
The voice said, harsh in his head, and in his mouth a taste like blood.
Danbala is riding her.
He knew somehow what the words meant, but the voice was iron in his head. The milky fabric divided, seemed to bubble, became two patches of shifting gray.
Legba, she said. Legba in Ugo Ferai, god of war, Papa Ugu, San Jacques Major, vive la vieille.
Iron laughter filled the matrix, sawing through Bobby's head.
Mabkit tu misère actujon,
said another voice, fluid and quicksilver and cold.
Si, papa, she has come here to throw away her bad luck.
And then that one laughed as well, and Bobby fought down a wave of sheer hysteria as the silver laughter rose through him like bubbles.
Has she bad luck, the horse of Danbala?
Boomed the iron voice of Ugo Ferre, and for an instant, Bobby thought he saw a figure flicker in the gray fog. The voice hooted its terrible laughter.
Indeed, indeed, but she knows it not. She is not my horse, no, else I would cure her luck.
Bobby wanted to cry, to die, anything to escape the voices, the utterly impossible wind that had started to blow out of the gray warps, a hot, damp wind that smelled of things he couldn't identify.
And she calls praise on the Virgin. Hear me, little sister. La Vieille draws close indeed. Yes, said the other. She moves through my province now. I who rule the roads, the highways. But I, Ugo Ferai, tell you that your enemies draw near as well. To the gate, sister, and beware.
And then the gray areas faded, dwindled, shrank.
Check us out,
she said, her voice small and distant. And then she said,
Lucas is dead.
Jammer took a bottle of scotch from his desk drawer and carefully poured 6 centimeters of the stuff into a plastic highball glass. You look like shit, he said to Jackie, and Bobby was startled by the gentleness in the man's voice. They'd been jacked out for at least 10 minutes, and nobody had said anything at all. Jackie looked crushed and kept gnawing at her lower lip. Jammer looked either unhappy or angry, Bobby wasn't sure.
How come you said Lucas was dead?
Bobby ventured, because it seemed to him that the silence was tilting up in Jammer's cramped office like something that could choke you. Jackie looked at him and didn't seem to focus.
They wouldn't come to me like that if Lucas were alive, she said. There are pacts, agreements. Legba is always invoked first, but he should have come with Danbala. His personality depends on the lower he manifests with. Lucas must be dead.
Jammer pushed the glass of whiskey across the desk, but Jackie shook her head. The trode set still riding her forehead, chrome and black nylon. He made a disgusted face, pulled the glass back and downed it himself.
What a load of shit. Things made a lot more sense before you people started screwing around with them.
We didn't bring him here, Jammer, she said.
They were just there. and they found us because we understood them.
Same load of shit, Jammer said wearily. Whatever they are, wherever they came from, they just shaped themselves to what a bunch of crazed spades wanted to see. You follow me? There's no way in hell there'd be anything out there that you had to talk to in fucking Bush Haitian. You and your voodoo cult. They just saw that, and they saw a setup. And Beauvoir and Lucas and the rest, they're businessmen first. And those goddamn things know how to make deals. It's a natural.
He tightened the cap on his bottle and put it back in the drawer.
You know, hon, it could just be that somebody very big, with a lot of muscle on the grid, they're just taking you for a ride. Projecting those things, all that shit. And you know it's possible, don't you? Don't you, Jackie?
No way, Jackie said, her voice cold and even. But how I know that's not anything I can explain.
Jammer took a black slab of plastic from his pocket and began to shave.
Sure,
he said. The razor hummed as he worked on the line of his jaw.
I lived in cyberspace for 8 years, right? Well, I know there wasn't anything out there, not then. Anyway, you want me to phone Lucas, set your mind at ease one way or the other? You got the phone number for that Rolls of his?
No, Jackie said. Don't bother. Best we lay low till Beauvoir turns up.
She stood pulling off the trodes and picking up her hat.
I'm going to lie down, try to sleep. You keep an eye on Bobby.
She turned and walked to the office door. She looked as though she were sleepwalking, all the energy gone out of her.
Wonderful,
Jammer said, running the shaver along his upper lip.
You want a drink?
He asked Bobby.
Well, Bobby said, it's kind of early. For you, maybe.
He put the razor back in his pocket. The door closed behind Jackie. Jammer leaned forward slightly.
What did they look like, kid? You gonna make?
Just kind of grayish, fuzzy.
Jammer looked disappointed. He slouched back in his chair again.
I don't think you can get a good look at him unless you're part of it.
He drummed his fingers on the chair arm.
You think they're for real? Well, I wouldn't want to try messing one around.
Jammer looked at him.
No? Well, maybe you're smarter than you look there. I wouldn't want to try messing one around myself. I got out of the game before they started turning up.
So what do you think they are?
Ah, still getting smarter. Well, I don't know. Like I said, I don't think I can swallow them being a bunch of Haitian voodoo gods, but who knows?
He narrowed his eyes.
Could be their virus programs that have gotten loose in the Matrix and replicated and gotten really smart. That's scary enough. Maybe the Turing people want it kept quiet. Or maybe the AIs have found a way to split parts of themselves off into the Matrix, which would drive the Turings crazy. I knew this Tibetan guy did hardware mod for jockeys. He said they were tulpas.
Bobby blinked.
A tulpa's a thought form, kind of. Superstition. Really heavy people can split off a kind of ghost made of negative energy.
He shrugged.
More horseshit. Like Jackie's voodoo guys.
Well, it looks to me like Lucas and Beauvoir and the others, they sure as hell play it like it was all real, and not just like it was an act.
Jammer nodded.
You got it. And they've been doing damn well for themselves by it, too. So there's something there.
He shrugged and yawned.
I gotta sleep too. You can do whatever you want as long as you keep your hands off my deck. and don't try to go outside, or 10 kinds of alarms will start screaming. There's juice and cheese and shit in the fridge behind the bar.
Bobby decided that the place was still scary, now that he had it to himself, but that it was interesting enough to make the scariness worthwhile. He wandered up and down behind the bar, touching the handles of the beer taps and the chrome drink nozzles. There was a machine that made ice, and another one that dispensed boiling water. He made himself a cup of Japanese instant coffee and sorted through Jammer's file of audio cassettes. He'd never heard of any of the bands or artists. He wondered whether that meant that Jammer, who was old, liked old stuff, or if this was all really new stuff that wouldn't filter out to Barrytown, probably by way of Leon's, for another 2 weeks. He found a gun under the black and silver Universal credit console at the end of the bar, a kind of fat little machine gun with a magazine that stuck straight down out of the handle. It was stuck under the bar with a strip of lime green Velcro, and he didn't think it was a good idea to touch it. After a while, he didn't feel frightened anymore, just kind of bored and edgy. He took his cooling coffee and walked out into the middle of the seating area. He sat at one of the tables and pretended he was Count Zero, top console artist in the sprawl, waiting for some dudes to show and talk about a deal, some run they needed done, and nobody but the Count was even remotely up for it.
"Sure," he said to the empty nightclub, his eyes hooded. "I'll cut it for you. If you got the money."
They paled when he named his price. The place was soundproofed. You couldn't hear the bustle of the 14th floor stalls at all. Only the hum of some kind of air conditioner and the occasional gurgles of the hot water machine. Tired of the Count's power plays, Bobby left the coffee cup on the table and crossed to the entranceway, running his hand along an old stuffed velvet rope that was slung between polished brass poles. Careful not to touch the glass doors themselves, he settled himself on a cheap steel stool with a tape-patched leatherette top beside the coat check window. A dim bulb burned in the coat room. You could see a couple of dozen old wooden hangers dangling from steel rods, each one hung with a round yellow hand-numbered tag. He guessed Jammer sat here sometimes to check out the clientele. He didn't really see why anybody who'd been a shit-hot cowboy for 8 years would want to run a nightclub, but maybe it was sort of a hobby. He guessed you can get a lot of girls running a nightclub, but he'd assumed you can get a lot anyway if you were rich. And if Jammer had been a top jock for 8 years, Bobby figured he had to be rich. He thought about the scene in The Matrix, the gray patches and the voices. He shivered. He still didn't see why it meant Lucas was dead. How could Lucas be dead? Then he remembered that his mother was dead, and somehow that didn't seem too real either. Jesus. It all got on his nerves. He wished he were outside, on the other side of the doors, checking out the stalls and the shoppers and the people who worked there. He reached out and drew the velour curtain aside, just wide enough to peer out through the thick old glass, taking in the rainbow jumble of stalls and the characteristic grazing gait of the shoppers. And framed for him, square in the middle of it all, beside a table jammed with surplus analog VOMs, logic probes and power conditioners, was the raceless, bone-heavy face of Leon. And the deep-set, hideous eyes seemed to look into Bobby's with an audible click of recognition. And then Leon did something Bobby couldn't remember ever having seen him do. He smiled.